Monday afternoon, kind of a gray day as people walk up and down Michigan Avenue. It's outside the Allstate Showcase studio here, and everything's looking good. We got the Burlington Eagles outside. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but the folks from Chicago Inn are in the studio as well, Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke. We'll talk to them about the latest in the world of tech. Randy Schaefer will be here a little bit later to fix your iPhones, but we start by saying hello to Jim and Catherine. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch, both of you.
Thanks. What's up, Steve?
Survived the weekend, I think, right?
Survived, yes. Changed my closet over for the first time. Finally put the khaki shorts away and got the pullovers out. So I'm all in on winter now.
All right, we're going to edit that part out for Jim's self-esteem. We're not going to let anyone know that he told people he did that. Catherine, I hope yours was more exciting.
Yeah, a little more exciting.
We've talked about outcome health in the past few weeks. Well, quite a bit. I had one of the co-founders on earlier this summer, and the Wall Street Journal kind of did this story where it revealed that they had some problems with maybe exaggerating their reach, right? And now the Wall Street Journal's out with another story. Is it today that they're losing? Look, they could be losing tens of millions of dollars in advertising.
Yeah, the sort of fallout continues for really Chicago's hottest startup. Right, earlier in this year, raised $500 million at a $5.5 billion valuation. Chicago's most valuable tech startup, Outcome Health. And yeah, the fallout continues. So the Wall Street Journal basically did this 5-month-long investigation into basically it concluded that Outcome was misleading advertisers based on how many screens they had and how many ads were actually getting in front of patients. And so basically the news story now is that some advertisers are suspending their deals with Outcome Health. Most notably, Bristol-Myers Squibb said they have not opted to renew their agreement for 2018.
And so if you read it, Catherine, it looks like some of them they're not completely breaking, right? They're just saying, we want an audit. Maybe we'll come back if it works out.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, and so, I mean, basically this third party audit that Outcome Health is currently doing is going to be extremely important, right? Because the results of that are going to be how they continue to get advertiser spending to not only renew, but to get new clients as well.
I mean, this is a good faith thing. You've got to rely on, if you want people to give you tens of millions of dollars, they've got to believe you're telling them the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's funny. It's not really a problem that only Outcome is facing. I mean, every advertising business kind of has sort of similar obstacles to get over, right? I mean, how is my ad being shown to as many people? You know, how effective is this digital advertising? So it's something industry-wide, but also of note in this story, Vivek Kundra, the chief operating officer for Outcome Health, has departed the company. He was a very big hire when he came on to Outcome Health. He was formerly on the Obama administration, a Salesforce executive, so he is out kind of amid all of the controversy.
So are we supposed to read something into that?
So, I mean, the comment from Outcome Health was that, you know, he made a decision for his family to go move on. He was leaving in good faith and gone on good terms with Outcome Health, so he didn't actually respond to the report himself.
Well, you know, I'm wishing them the best because they're a nice Chicago story. They're a big giant. And you know, sometimes they're growing pain. Sometimes there's nefarious activity. So I hope there's something a little benign here.
I think so. And it'll depend on this third-party audit, right? If it comes back clean and they can move forward, I think that this is kind of a bump in the road for them that they'll be able to move past.
All right, Catherine, last week we were here talking, I think it was just last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Parachute
yep.
had been on, what's that
Shark
show called?
Tank.
Shark Tank. The night before, and they came away with $500,000, and boy, a lot has happened since then.
Yeah. So Parachute is a startup here in Chicago, and they were on Shark Tank last Sunday. And, you know, during the show, Mark Cuban agreed to invest $500,000 in their company. But we later found out that actually that deal fell through just like a couple weeks before the episode aired. But, you know, then we also found out that Desiree Vargas Wrigley, she's the founder and CEO of Parachute. She experienced kind of the darker side of like that kind of exposure. You know, we talked last week about how a startup being on Shark Tank, even if they don't get an investment, is just really good exposure, really
right.
good for business.
Right.
But she actually received a text message from a number she didn't recognize a couple days after the episode aired that commented on her appearance and delivered kind of like a graphic sexual remark. And made her really uncomfortable. She told me in an interview that, you know, it was just such an invasion of privacy for her. And that, you know, it's one thing to get these kind of comments on social media, on Facebook or Twitter, but to get them on a personal platform on your cell phone is
yeah,
just
it's
like,
a little
really
different.
Invasive.
I mean, I certainly get tech, not sexual related or appearance related, but, you know, hate-filled texts on mm-hmm. here almost every day. And but when one pops up, and it's not from you, is it, Dahlke? No, you're not doing it. But when one pops up on your phone where you think it's a little more private, that can give you the willies a little bit.
And boy, it just really shows you, you know, kind of the obstacles that female entrepreneurs have to face that their male counterparts certainly don't. I mean, if I was going to be pitching a gadget on Shark Tank,
right.
A text message about my appearance is so far down on the list of things I'd have to worry about. And so this is just one of those things that women, women entrepreneurs unfortunately have to face that men don't.
It also speaks to where we are right now in the conversation that's the headline in this story.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, the headline is they lost the cash, right? I mean, right. They filmed the episode and it's sort of the perils of a TV show because on the TV show that hadn't aired, you know, we saw them last week getting this investment by Mark Cuban, but there would have been nice, and it turns out they're not going to get that money after all.
Mm-mm, no, and that's actually pretty common for like Shark Tank appearances. Sometimes the deals just fall through.
So you're telling me I can't believe what I watch on Shark Tank?
I would definitely verify. But I mean, really, the big point to me is that, you know, even if companies don't get investments, I mean, that's, you know, not really the most important thing. If you're a consumer brand, getting your face out there to users and to shoppers is really important.
And they say they are much bigger now than they were then. So, right. Okay, we're going to do a commercial break here. And I want you to listen carefully to each commercial because they're all important. But while you're listening, run into the bathroom and look at your loofah sponge. We'll tell you why in a minute. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 15 points so far today. Not a lot of movement. Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke are in the studio from Chicago Inno. And all right, I want to talk about this. Who's got this one? Catherine, I think, is going to talk to me about Scrub 30. As I said, I hope during the commercial break you're able to get a good look at your loofah sponge because it is apparently bacteria-ridden.
Yeah.
Tell me about
apparently.
That.
So Scrub 30 is a new Chicago startup that is selling a gender-neutral bath product subscription service. So they want to deliver you shampoos, body gels, and a new loofah every 30 days. They claim that in their research, dermatologists recommend that you change your loofah every 30
change
days.
Change your loofah every 30 days, right.
And so they're delivering gels in 2.5 fluid ounce bottles, you know, so that they last for about 30 days,
right.
So that you need to keep getting these boxes.
So gender
neutral. So they're supposed to be like scented for...
I'm looking at their scents. It's cherry blossom, midnight berry...
Lakeview Breeze.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Lakeview... I don't think I want to smell like Lakeview Breeze. I've been to Lakeview.
I think
I'm not sure about
the Chicago River scent.
Right, exactly. So this guy's idea is to a new subscription box to get the different... you know, maybe I wish him well. I hate to be... Because I don't know. You know, I was telling you guys off the air sometimes my temptation is to just, you know, be critical or poke fun, but I hope the guy does well.
Yeah.
The boxes are a big deal.
They are. So, I mean, this is the first sort of soap and scrub delivery box that I've seen, but I mean, we're seeing subscription box services in just about every consumer category from makeup to clothes to shoes. I mean, pretty much everything.
I want to mention his name. Matt Mrocek, I think, is his name, and only because he's got a great promotional photo of him in the shower with his loofah sponge. You guys got me to become a Dollar Shave Club member.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. How are you liking that?
I'm waiting for my box. It's coming. it was shipped the other day, so I should be getting it soon.
Yeah.
But the idea is, right, they sell, I get razors from them. I just getting a new hair gel from them because that's what they do, right? You end up buying up.
Exactly. And it's funny how the subscription box service has really taken off, right? The subscription monthly feature isn't like a new thing. I mean, there's been the fruit of the month and the wine of the month.
I was the record of the month club,
right? I mean, this for decades. I mean, we've been doing this, but you're really starting to see them in startups. The key, right, for a lot of these companies isn't so much acquiring customers, it's keeping them. I mean, we're seeing that even with companies like Blue Apron. I mean, they are pretty easy to get a customer, you know, get them a 50% off coupon. Blue Apron and lots of other these subscription companies are having a hard time continuing to hold on to customers. So that will be the trick with Scrub 30 and pretty much every subscription box startup.
So you can try it. You just got to keep going.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had a Birchbox subscription, and I canceled it after like 7 months just because I didn't need it anymore, you know? I figured I got what I wanted.
Well, in the Birchbox, they would just give you little samples, right? And then they want you to buy up.
Right. And then they want you to go to their website and buy the full size of the samples they've been sending you.
What subscription box do you have there, Jim?
My wife has done Stitch Fix, and so that's for clothes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think, you know, for what she saw is that it was just getting kind of expensive to do it every month. I mean, there was some, you can keep what you want and return what you don't.
It's a good point, though, because there's a novelty to it, mm-hmm. and you've got to maintain the enthusiasm with your people.
There's some
and
surprise.
And Dollar Shave Club does a good job with that, yeah. with their little newsletters and their emails yeah. and things like that.
A buddy of mine subscribed to a sunglasses subscription every month called Stunner of the Month, and he got a different pair of random really? Sunglasses every month. Yeah.
My son found a t-shirt subscription where I think it was like the Record Club. For $10, they would send you 10 t-shirts. And then for $8 a month, I think they would send you 3 more. And what they were like the Kiwanis Club from Cedar Rapids, who had extra t-shirts, you know, and they would just send them. And so he tried it. He didn't think it was very good. Hey, we got a couple minutes here, and I know 50 on Fire is coming up, which is a big event for you guys. Tell me about it.
Yeah, 50 on Fire is Chicago NO's big end-of-year awards event. It's November 16th at the Builders Building at 222 North LaSalle. And really, this is our opportunity to kind of have a big end-of-year event to really honor the innovators and the people in Chicago Tech who have been really doing some really great stuff. We have 150 nominees that we've whittled down. We will take those down to 50. Those will be the 50 winners where we will reveal them at our big event on November 16th.
And that's open to the public, or who goes to these things?
Yes. So tickets on ChicagoNO.com. You'll want to come there for some drinks, some bites, and to network with some of the most impressive folks in the innovation economy here in Chicago.
Catherine, will you be there?
I'll be there.
Well,
be
see,
my
there's
first
reason.
Event.
Jim, you'll be there.
We'll be.
And the food is good. It's not.
I can confirm that we have.
Did you go for a tasting?
Chicken and waffles on a stick is one of the
nice.
Items. So yeah, it's going to be worth it.
Well, it's a cool thing. I mean, I've hung out with that crowd a little bit, and it's always a fun time. Tell me again, where do people get information?
ChicagoNO.com. You can buy tickets to 50 on Fire there. You can also subscribe to The Beat, our daily email newsletter, right on the website.
All right. The event's 10 days away.
That's right.
We'll see you again next week.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Catherine Davis, Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Check them out there. Monday afternoon, Philip Weiss is in the studio. He's the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work and comes by from time to time. Philip, good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. So tell me what Seyfarth Shaw at Work is and why you're extra busy these days.
Well, we hope we're always busy, but yes, we are extra busy last couple months. We're a training and compliance strategy company. We help organizations comply with the latest laws and really take legal trends and legal news and boil them down to simple takeaways.
And prepare businesses. And right now, harassment is huge in the news.
Yeah. I mean, every time you think something will sort of be the new headline, the next story is about harassment, and these days it's been a real drumbeat, as you know.
Well, okay, so you'd be a real barometer. Have you seen an increase in inquiries?
We have. What's interesting is we've seen an increase in two areas. Number one, when we're already training a company, when the training is on the books, the call comes in to make sure we give people the tools so that they know what to spot, what to bring up
right.
when they see something, particularly right. if it's higher-level misconduct. And even if they're dealing with like a client or a third party, another company, a customer, how do you deal with that kind of misconduct?
That's an interesting scenario because then you have to be cognizant of your business.
That's right.
You don't want to cost yourself business too.
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, that's where having strategies that are subtle enough and diplomatic enough not to blow up the relationship.
Right.
is so critical, are so critical, and in a way, that's where you can have the greatest success. Because if you can show a client or customer that you're actually looking out for their interests, that you've got rules and you want to protect them given your rules and current expectations, done properly, that can build customer loyalty.
So, you know, Philip, you come by and we talk about a variety of issues all the time. And I have to tell you, one thing I don't want to do or one thing I resist doing is beating a dead horse. Or if it's already been talked out, I don't really want to keep talking. And that's kind of what in a way, I'm like, come on, this has been going on. But the fact is, it just keeps getting bigger. I mean, I think we are in sort of a transformative time right now.
Absolutely. This is kind of an inflection point, and I don't know if it's going to have to recur, if we're going to have another explosion of cases to keep the ball moving, but we actually see a number of sea change moments that we haven't seen before.
And I don't mean to be naive if you're listening thinking that things are going to, that it's going to be fixed now.
That's right.
But the fact is, I think we've taken a big step around a corner.
We have. And to your point, Steve, there's no question that sort of what we're seeing is in what you might call the celebrity sphere.
Right.
It's those entertainment companies, big name restaurateurs, but the conversation is spreading far beyond into the sort of corporate sphere in general.
Okay, you tell me then. You know, there just is a theater company that's involved with it over the weekend. It's come up. So it did start celebrity, but now it's coming down closer to home. I know you said you've been hearing from a lot of your clients. Have there been increases in complaints with your clients?
Well, there have been many more questions from employees to HR professionals. And that's the first, that's kind of the first tick
right.
you tend to see and tend to hear about. But what's really fascinating is when we do one-on-one sessions with executives, not about their misconduct, to talk to them about strategy or an upcoming program. The last five times we've had one of these meetings in the last 2 weeks, the CEO or CFO has said to us or said to me, let's go kind of off the record.
Yeah.
tell me what I need to do because I don't know that I have not been enough of a stalwart defender of respect. Have I been an enabler? No one says, you know, by the way, I'm a harasser. I volunteer that admission.
Right.
But now they're actually looking in the mirror and saying, maybe in some way I've enabled it. What can I do? When can I step in?
Well, it's such a subjective thing, right? So the famous Supreme Court that, you know, you'll know pornography when you see it.
Right.
Is that the case with harassment or is it not?
Yeah, it is in a way, but I would change that one quote to say it's potentially misconduct or disrespect or maybe harassment when we all see it. And what I mean by that is this is where training is so important. Good training, what it really does is it gets people together in a room and the collective, the consensus identifies when some kind of conduct, when one comment, when one email, even a meme might cross the line. Because, you know, we've talked about this. We never know what's illegal.
Right.
We never know what's too much under the law. But if you get a group of your colleagues to say together, you know what, we all agree, or 80% of us agree, that could offend somebody, that's very valuable information.
Okay, let me ask you this. When you hear from your companies, are they saying, hey, there's a guy who we're a little concerned about?
Yeah.
Right? And what do you tell them then?
Yeah, we tell them, how concerned are you? How much might be behind the concern? Because we want to know what the right kind of solution is. Sometimes the solution is you're doing training. He or she is going to be in the room. These days it might be more he than she, but mm-hmm. never know. We'll make sure we target some of the examples so the person themselves doesn't feel targeted, but they get the message. In other cases, you might need to do a kind of a one-on-one to show them both the risks they face and the impacts of their conduct.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get a handle on, I'm going to say the criminal here, and criminal is not the right word, but if they are, I'm just wondering what percentage of offenders are aware of their offensive behavior or what percent just have no idea?
Yeah, this is really anecdotal as opposed to scientific because these people don't want to be voluntarily
sure.
pulled into a survey
sure.
with those kind of questions. But based on what we've seen over the last 10 years, I think about 5 to 7%. They enjoy the sort of the
power of
the
it.
Power and the evil results. The rest of them they're basically convinced themselves this is a perk of power. This is a perk of wealth. This is a perk of getting 1,000 people employed. Therefore, I can engage in some conduct that others might not be permitted or licensed to do. So it's really a foolhardy and dangerous thought process.
Okay, so with that mindset, then what training actually? What are the specifics? What effects change?
Well, at the top, first of all, what's happening now helps affect change, where people are looking in the mirror.
And they're seeing consequences.
And they're seeing consequences because the fact is there are executives who've lost millions of dollars in terms of their own pensions being lost, who've faced personal liability in court. That's nothing new. But now there's a magnifying glass and there's a door opening on the fact that those risks exist. Companies can implode and pensions and financial security can be lost. Beyond that, it's really about ensuring that you get the kind of highly impactful, very immersive experience. So people in a room all come to an agreement that we have a standard. It backs us all up. We're all supposed to support it. It's kind of like a fire. We liken harassment to a fire. People play around with it, but you need everyone to be a first responder to step in and say
right.
the right thing early on.
Okay, so, yeah, you know, I famously, there's a 70-year-old guy who's in the news, and people like to say, well, he's 70, he's not going to change his behavior.
Yeah.
So how do you affect behavior among these people? I mean, do you do it under threat?
Yeah.
Do you try to build empathy within them? Or
yeah, you do a little bit of everything, because the fact is, people do have there's sort of a greed and fear factor that you can tap into, but that's only the first step. And that only works if there is in fact, that kind of hammer. Seeing the fact that there impact, their conduct has impacted others and will continue to do so, is extremely important. So part of it is risk, part of it is seeing the impact, and part of it is peer pressure. We've had so much success with executive teams when we get five people on board and they can push the last one or two over the line back into what we call the respect zone.
So people within a company saying, hey, Harvey, you can't behave that way.
That might have been a good idea.
Training can be dangerous if it's been done badly.
It can, and it has been. Because either it's not effective, right? You got a bunch of people just with hypos and PowerPoints, and people are happy when the bell rings.
Right, right, right.
PowerPoint, we call it the power nap these days. The problem with that is if you ever are sued, a good plaintiff lawyer can get someone in a deposition and show they remembered nothing from that training. But that's not even the most dangerous kind of poor training. The most dangerous training is when people feel so bad about what they haven't addressed, they go too far. So we had a company where came to us for help. It was a clothing company where the premise was, we don't want to be part of this wave of disrespect. We want men to respect women more. We want them to rid themselves of their stereotypes. So women in the room, tell us how you've been treated. It's okay. It's safe.
Right. I can imagine they were pretty quiet.
Yeah, they said nothing. Not a peep. And then so they turned to the men. The trainer said, okay, so no, gentlemen, please, if you would, be honest about your biases, your stereotypes, whether a current or former bias you held, we want to know about it. Men at first were a little reluctant, but then they spoke up. And what they revealed, and maybe well-intentioned, like, you know, I honestly did feel like women aren't the best salespeople. And
right.
They don't want to take out the trash from the clothing store because they don't want to mess up their nails. You know, women, they're not going to have the stamina of a man. Well, all those comments, whether they were intended as a cathartic moment or not, ended up in a future lawsuit, a later lawsuit, which resulted in $15 million in damages.
Wow.
Because they showed a mindset among the males, including managers, who were voicing these opinions to get their colleagues.
So
to speak
it wasn't
up.
A safe zone at all.
Yeah, training, everything in training is discoverable. And so if we had another company that came to us. This is actually pretty recent. They distributed a video called, the title was, "What is Harassment?" And under that, "Are You a Harasser?" And they listed out the kind of things, the kind of conduct that they viewed as harassment, some of which actually probably occurred in that workplace.
Right.
But if you're declaring something to be illegal and someone can prove it's happened
in your workplace,
it's a get into court free card.
Philip Weiss, the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Great to talk to you again. Come by soon.
Good to talk to you.
Randy Schaefer is a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune, writes about our social media, talks to us about social media. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch, Randy.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve.
Okay, so I noticed this, I think maybe it was on Saturday yesterday, when I was writing, I was tweeting to an Irish cousin in Dubai, and I'm typing I, and I get this weird, when I would try to type an I would get, I think, a question mark and an A in a box.
Yep.
And I had no idea what it was. I just kept going, and then I'm kind of finding out it's a thing.
Yeah, it's actually a hidden feature of the brand new iPhone X. It's supposed to be like that, Steve. No. So this is actually, the Telegraph wrote about this. This is actually a glitch that is happening with the new iOS update. It should be worked out when the next update comes through. But in the meantime, a lot of people are having some issues trying to treat people like, I'm on my way. And it comes up as, hey, question mark, I'm on my way.
Yeah, it was very weird sort of. And I guess the idea is that it's, I had it highlighted. I lost it now. It's like a referred to as character T16 or something, where they marry up two
yeah,
different characters.
Yeah, and it's basically just a little bit of coding that kind of helps transform text into emojis, but it's not functioning as it should.
I upgraded to the latest operating system a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, the
but
latest,
it just sheared up this week.
Yeah, I think there were two of them. There was one with the iPhone, what are we on, 8 release, and then another one with the iPhone 10 release, I am correct about that.
Okay, so there are these fixes that seem to be way too involved.
I wouldn't say way too involved, but more involved than it should be. It's actually pretty simple. If you are being driven absolutely insane by this, you can go to settings on your iPhone. And I wrote it down here somewhere too. Settings, general, keyboard, and text replacement. And then just for the phrase, you can type an uppercase I. And then for the shortcut, you can type a lowercase I. And that should solve the problem until Apple patches through an update.
So I just wrote, I guess it's showing my self-absorbed self. I wrote enough messages with I or enough tweets with I that the I has now become my default with autocorrect anyway.
Has it?
So it replaced itself. So If you talk about yourself enough, it just takes care of the problem.
I guess, yeah, that's what could really make our country better, is if we all talk about ourselves right. more.
Let's go to Pinterest, because I who was it that who did this story?
BuzzFeed News.
BuzzFeed did this story, where they looked at a lot of posts on Pinterest about health and food, and they found there's really no science to any of this stuff.
No, and I found this absolutely fascinating. So everyone knows Pinterest, you know, you see a cute outfit, you repin it. You see a really nice-looking lasagna recipe, you pin it. So there's an entire market for health pins on Pinterest, and a lot of these are kind of unsubstantiated and could actually lead to some serious illnesses and issues. If taken seriously.
So go back to WebMD or...
Consult a doctor, you know? I think a licensed doctor...
Vinegar doesn't fix everything?
No, apple cider vinegar does not fix anything. And then this one, boiled cinnamon and honey is the cure for many health problems. That one's not correct either. It cannot solve listed cancer, arthritis, and gallbladder infections. That's
all right, we're about
true.
Out of time, though. So what's Pinterest's reaction? Do they try to take these things down?
Yeah, Pinterest has been pretty good about trying to take these things down. So that's good because the... the least we do not need any more fake news in 2017.
But you know, also though, some of these things are folk remedies, and there must be some science or some history. I brought us each in a little shot of balsamic vinegar. Will you drink it with me? Because the Italians do that. It works very well
for
them.
That sounds good, but let's cut the mic so no one can hear me gag.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll see you again next week.
See ya.